So we're pleased to have John Shi with the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. And John, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to have this opportunity to share with you about recently half years of our thinking and earlier studies in this area. So that brings the topic of this today's talk towards spatial data science. I would like to go through this a number of items: science and data science. Then it comes to the spatial data science proposed thinking. And then the next is if we're going to propose developing this as a data science, then we need to consider what are the basic scientific issues and challenges for this science. So finally, I give some summary. First of all, I think we all know what's science because we people working on this, right? So a systematic enterprise that builds and organizes knowledge in the form of testable explanation and a prediction about the universe. I think here I would like to highlight the nature of our science is to explain or to predict something. That's I would like to say later on, I will also say in our field as a spatial data science, that should be kept and should be included. If we talk about science, this knowledge itself that can rationally explain and reliably apply. So that means that is a discovered universe. That's the knowledge that can explain something and also can be used to apply to solve problems in the real world. So I think that's one thing. We about most of cases we working on the nature science, and in the early time then this is the philosophy of nature. So that's how this comes. I think if we talk about the science like physics, like chemistry, this can be a disciplined way to study the nature world. Let's say, for example, physics. We use the rules there, and we use laws of physics to study, to discover the knowledge there. And another type of the science, like a computer science or computing science, this is a broader sense of a reliable and a teachable knowledge, and putting that knowledge together, and finally, gradually, developed as a science, computer science, for example. Science, I think we actually discovered the universe in different scale or dimension. That's where the I called from website on that. So for example, our Earth and space are actually specified in that dimension. But with the new measurement technology like satellite image, then we can, I think, can go to much more detail and scale. Data science, I think this is come from with today, say for instance, many of focus on big data, but I think the data science actually came much more than recent. Say for instance, in the 1960s, initially it is considered as a substitute for computer science as a data science. And recently in 1997, statistically can be is considered can be data science or not, it's debatable. So I think basically in terms of data science, computer science and the statistics, perhaps has a strong influence to the coming of data science. But the nature of data science is multidisciplinary, including not only the statistics, mathematics, computer science, but information theory and others. So if we talk about data science today, because it get more and more attention to this topic of data science is because of big data. Let me quote the IBM definitions on the big data. It's about volume, so we have a large volume of data. Variety, we have a different data about nature description. Velocity, so the accumulation of data, the speed of accumulation data getting faster and faster. Finally, is the veracity. Maybe I would like to talk a little bit more here, because that is a straightforward, I think, and then we can understand that without any problem. But here, I would like to, perhaps you cannot see from the distance, I highlight here. Here says, poor data quality cost the U.S. economy around the $3.1 trillion yearly. And here says, one in three business leaders don't trust the information they use to make decisions. So I would like to mention a little bit more here, because that's one thing we need to know. The uncertainty of data is a big issue. Number two is, in the past years, we've been working on the uncertainties of spatial data and analysis a little bit. So perhaps we can see a little more on that. So that's the big data area. So I think we have to address on that four V's. Now today we come with five or six V's, even more descriptions on big data. But here I would like to quote on this. So that's our big data in general. What about us? So we're working on spatial data. The one of a very straightforward inference is we have a spatial big data, for instance, here. So what can be called a spatial big data? To me, I think accumulate or long-term accumulate satellite image, I think should be big enough to be considered as big data or spatial big data. We've been working on digital city or cyber city for many years. So data accumulate for description on city digitally in different format, different data, big enough, and also the format is quite different, diverse enough to be regarded as big data. So data from video cameras like CCTV, that's actually a huge data, much larger than the data we have in GIS. So I think that should be regarded as big data. And also with location from NASA CCTV data. So those are the examples of spatial big data. So in line with big data, we focus on or we emphasize on spatial big data. So next comes to the question, should we consider long-term development about spatial big data? Then can we raise the issue of spatial data science? So that's how the question comes from. I show you some example about the quality or uncertainty in the data. This is the Google data we use in Hong Kong. I show you example. This is we're trying to find a bakery, so you can find a lunch, right, somewhere. So here is the location of that Chihua is very good bakery shop. The Google Map indicates location is here, but actually it's in that region. So there's difference between the location, the true location we have. Another example, I show you the similar products in China is called Baidu. It's similar as a Google search engine, quite large user. Once I had a conference in Beijing, So I use my mobile phone, so I run out of money of this mobile phone. I need top access, so I need to find a telephone shop. Then that's my hotel. So the Baidu system told me I should go there. So when I went there, that's the shop there. Actually, they already closed that shop. So then the neighbor is kind enough told me the shop closed 2 months ago and told me the new location. Actually, it's somewhere more to here. And then I went there. Okay, that's really the true location of here. And here says in Chinese, it's 14 minutes. Means if I go here to here, it takes 40 minutes. Actually, it took me 35 minutes to get there and back 10 minutes. So I'm a stranger there, so I needed to ask two person actually on the way there. I think it took a longer time. So based on those two examples, one is from Google, one is from Baidu, I would like to share with you actually quality of data, particularly on the internet. Sometimes it's not a guarantee. You can probably have a location or position error of those two locations, and data can be not updated. The attribute provided here cannot be correct. Say, for instance, instead of 20, 35 or 20 minutes working distance, compared with the indicated given data time here. So that's the quality problem we have about the internet. I just stay in Beijing for 2 days. That's the only time I use Baidu Map to do some search. Then I found that there's a quality problem. And we also found many problems of Google Map in Hong Kong about the quality. So we have to consider the quality or uncertainties in this spatial data, particularly when that's become a big data. Then we even have more potential problems there, so we need to handle it. So spatial data size, so that's I define as a size discovering spatial knowledge and explaining spatial regularity about the universe based on spatial bracket big data. The reason I add a big data within the BRAC is because in the past, perhaps we don't have a big data. We also use spatial data to do spatial data mining, discovery, and knowledge generation. So with big data, perhaps we can provide a better opportunity and we have a more opportunity to find spatial knowledge. But we cannot ignore those use non-big data. We also can do something. If we specify it as a size, I think we need to identify what are the fundamental scientific issues as a size. So here I propose two probably can be considered. One is a spatial discovery and explanation. For example, we can use spatial data to discover and explain human motion behavior and the regularities of urban growth, say for instance, spatially and temporally. So that's our example. Spatial temporal prediction would predict something, predict trend of a human motion, or social events, or others, even some disease situation. So these are the two, at least I think, basic or fundamental science issues if we can propose as a science. Then I think the nature of our spatial data science is also multidisciplinary. That is the nature, can be supported by data science, perhaps extended to spatial and temporal. Geographic information science, of course, this is what we're doing, and that's our science. I think it can contribute more, and perhaps spatial data science can be considered as further development or involvement of GI science. Computing science, spatial statistics, machine learning, and spatial data mining. So that's can be potentially supporting theories to develop a new size, spatial data size. Of course, we have many challenge issues needed to tackle. See, for instance, spatial representation or description, spatial data analytics and discovery, heterogeneous information integration, multi-scale, different data format data, uncertainty handling in spatial big data, machine learning for based on spatial big data, and finally, can we come with a science with a, called a spatial data science? Maybe I can go a little bit more details on the thinking on as challenges. Spatial descriptions, I think, and the representation. One big issue is unstructured spatial data. That is our challenge. So in the database design, algorithm development, and the process method, and we have to deal with as unstructured spatial data. I think only when we can produce knowledge based on spatial big data, then the data can be really valued. So we need a systematic analysis, spatial, temporal characteristics of data, interpret the spatial analysis result. Heterogeneous spatial information integration, that has been a big challenge. Even in the past, we work on the spatial data interoperability. And today, even we come with a big spatial data, then even we have more challenge in that area. Uncertainties in spatial big data. I think today, if you use internet, nobody guarantee about the quality you're gonna use, right? So particularly that's from public media, like crowdsourcing and other internet data sources. And there's no mark on the quality or reliability the data you're gonna use. No quality standards or technical specifications for handling spatial data. In the measurement or mapping discipline, we have standards like OGC or national standards to do the data quality control. And now for internet data, no standards currently on that data quality. No quality control measures for spatial big data at that stage. Also, we've been studying for developing some method to measure or control those data from internet, like the example I show you there. Actually, we developed some method and applied patent for that technology, but I think that's a very small part of technology we are developing. We cannot say we have a method to control all the problems of quality problems of those data on the internet. No. So very challenging issue. With those issues, perhaps we can consider some research initiatives for long-term development science. See, for instance, spatial big data analytics and discovery, spatial temporal prediction of nature and social phenomena, spatial description and representation of spatial big data, especially for those unstructured data, spatial visual analytics, integration of heterogeneous spatial information, and uncertain modeling for spatial big data. So that's where the list. I think we should identify more when we go further on this spatial data science development. Let me share with you some of the example because I mentioned the fundamental science issue in spatial data science can be spatial temporal prediction. One of the example here is this is the one the example we did. This is H7N9 flu in China and the region. We developed method to predict spatial temporally on the cases. Here, those in blue cross. Okay, it goes very fast. You can see some blue crosses there. That's the true location of a cases in that area. That's the color indicating the prediction. That's the spatial significance the prediction will give. That's from 0 to 1. So with the reddish color means so we have a higher spatial significance. So with NAS, we predict, we're trying to predict cases, disease cases spatially and temporally. And the level of we can reach is about 70% of accuracy. We cannot reach 100% accuracy of prediction due to limitation or assumptions in the method and also the data volume we can get on the cases. So if we have a larger data volume, and perhaps we can have a better result. That's the method itself. It's a spatial temporal proximity method we use. One is a retrospective inference, one is a spatial extrapolation, and units risk prediction. So that's the three parts of the model we use. So basically, the first step is the retrospective inference. So we use the current case to inference what happened in the past temporally. And in spatially, we use the spatial extrapolation and to do the probability density function distribution. And finally, in the spatial and temporal dimension, we predict the coming cases. I have to say that's a short-term prediction. We cannot predict very long. This is the details of that method inference, and this is a PDF probability density function, and this is a spatial extrapolation to describe the spatial distribution model, and then this prediction units risk predicts. And this is the experiments. So basically, we use early days of the cases to predict the coming days. So this is the time dimension. This is the case number, and that's prediction the case. So those in red means we predict better, and those in blue means we didn't predict very well. So that's the case. So basically, for that case, we can reach to 70% of the correctness. With that, if we can have a better model, we have more data, perhaps we can improve that to some certain extent. And with that model, we can do the prediction. And that's with that predict cases, then we can control the spread of disease by to a certain extent. Spatial discovery. Let me show you another example. This is did by Professor Kwan. Her work is basically to use the data of people to track the people moving from early morning to the day to work and lunch and then afternoon work and back home and so on. So the whole day. Movement. So with that, many of those individuals, then we can study the group of people, what's their movement pattern. So this is discovery of how the people motion pattern. A very good example, I think. Their group work being published in Science on this. I think that shows a spatial discovery on the pattern of the people's motion or movement is very important, valuable research. Finally, the example, let me share with you uncertainty modeling. This is because I think this is in even not big data time, we already had big problems on uncertainty or data quality problem. Now today we're facing on big data, and we know we even have more problems there. So uncertainty in the real world, this is an inherent problem, uncertainty in the universe. And when people cognize the real world, then we have uncertainty through this cognition. I show you an example here. Daniel, he's my son. When he was very young, he played a toy. He needed to match the pattern, different shape and to the model. He didn't do very well at the beginning, okay? But after learning for 1-2 months, he could do that very well. I took that example to say, when people have limited knowledge, like a kid in the early time, and he could make mistakes or with uncertainties in cognizing different shape. But with us, even we have a lot of work, research, but we still have limited knowledge about the universe. So in cognize the real world, then we have uncertainty, we have a limitation. I take an example like pattern recognition from satellite image. You do the classification, you do feature extraction, you do the feature recognition. So in many times, we still cannot say with technology we have, we can 100% correct to do the classification. See, we reach 80% or 90%. It's very high classification accuracy. With the successful rate of recognized objects from satellite images limited. Do the change detection based on different time of satellite image to see what's the land cover being changed in this area. We still have limited quality of result. So that's the uncertainty in the cognition. Measurement. When we use equipment to measure, to do the measurement, we all know there were errors there. There a distribution of uncertainties there, so we cannot see the target precisely with uncertainty. When we have that measurement, then we do the analysis, we do the process, then the propagate of that uncertainty comes. Finally, we want to limit the quality in our map, like a Google map, like a satellite image, to limit to the uncertainty to a certain level. Then we need to do the quality control. Finally, we need to disseminate or to present the quality information to the end user. In one of my book on in the final chapter, I mentioned that we better to have the quality mark to the data, like map data you use from the internet, right? If you buy this computer, I think that's the back on, say, quality QC passed also. For each of a piece of equipment you buy, there's a mark attached to there. But when you use a map, tell me, can you see there's mark, not like that? No, okay. So we need, as a data provider, we need to present or disseminate quality information together with data. But from user point of view, they should understand the data you're going to use or you are using perhaps with problem, with quality issues, not 100% correct. So that's the logic flow on uncertain modeling for spatial data. Uncertainties, we have imprecision, ambiguity, and vagueness. That's the different type of uncertainty we have. And imprecision, actually, in the measurement of size, like a land surveying, we do mapping a building boundary. We have a Google map with the boundary of the location of street. In many cases, we're dealing with imprecision. There's nature is random error, but we do have ambiguity and vagueness. In particular, we use the nature language to communicate. This is near to the Harvard University. What do you mean near? It's 100 meter or 1 kilometer, that's the wake. So different kind of uncertainties there. Then we have a methods to process this. Give one of the example, confidence range model for this. Say for instance, in Google Map, you have a line on the road segment. Say for instance, here can be the solid line in that center, right? We actually, depending the error of that two endpoint, that's one and that's one, and also confidence level you define, we can define a range like boundary here. That's called a confidence range. Then we can say the true location of that measured line, perhaps we can indicate it by that dashed line, is included within that range with a probability larger than defined confidence level. So that is a confidence range model. Actually, in the measurement size, like geodesy surveying, we have an error model for point, like error ellipse to present as. But in GIS, that's a geographic analysis center, you do a lot of GIS. We have that vector data like a point, a line segment, polyline, curve, polygon, even 3D objects. So we have many different objects. In the past, we mainly have error model for points, but we didn't do much on the model for line segment and so on. So our research is for first model the error of line segment. Then we further extend those model to polyline, curve, polygon, and 3D objects. So we can then measure the uncertainty and the error of those complex objects. See, in particular, that's vector GIS data. Through the past 20 years, I think the breakthrough in that area on uncertain modeling perhaps can summarize as from determinant description to uncertain-based description. In GIS, say for instance, ArcGIS, if you describe a line, it's a crisp line, just 2 points, right? It's a geometric line. We normally don't present what's the uncertainty of that line, because the true location of that measurement line can be here or can be here, right? So the location you used from Google Map is just an indication, rough area of this. So if we can present more information, see the true location is roughly in that range, I think it's better to me, rather than just give a crisp line there, a geometric line. From model uncertainty to static data to spatial dynamic spatial analysis, like GIS, we have buffer, overlay, simplification, and so on. So that's are the different analysis models. From model uncertainty in the spatial data to spatial models. And then from uncertain description to the quality control. Description is the first step, tell you what's the quality level of those data, like a line of building boundary there. Quality controls say, if the quality of that boundary line is 0.1 meter, it's not good enough, then I do some measurement process, data process, to improve the quality, then say the quality of that line is better than 0.1 meter. That's the quality control. Uncertain-based data mining, because I think data mining is a very important part to later about knowledge discovery, particularly spatial data knowledge recovery. Then one of our research is on the spatial data association rule mining. This is one of the data mining. So in data mining, we do the association rule, classification, clustering, alternate detection. So that's our data mining methods. So we do that particular method and process those data with uncertainty. So in general, we do the spatial associated rule mining there are fake rules existing in the rule you mined, can be larger than 10 to 90% of the resultant rules are fake. So our method is to reduce those fake rules to make it the result better. So solution is a statistical method. The result increase for one of the results we increase is from 54 to 90% correct. So the increase is quite dramatic. So this is the progress we recently made in this area. Finally, let me quickly summary this presentation. Spatial data science, I think, can be a trend for our discipline in the era of big data. Of course, it's debatable, and I would like to hear from you whether you agree. We have a GIS system, geographic information system, and then go to GIS science based on the starting from the Professor Michael Guchai's paper in 1994 or two. And then what is next? We go to data science, we go to where? Fundamental scientific issue on data science, spatial data science, I think at least should include a spatial discovery and explanation and a spatial temporal prediction. Uncertainty is one of the issues we cannot ignore. That's a very important part. We have to develop methods to handle this. The nature of spatial data science is multidisciplinary in nature and include spatial statistics, computing science, our GIS, and data science. Spatial data science will have, I think, a significant impact both nature and social science in the future. Just like GI science, we have today have a strong influence and applications in many areas of science. With that, I conclude my presentation. Thank you very much.
Back to the flu tracking and flu prediction.
That's what.
So is this is showing the actual predicted areas, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and how then did you ground truth this compared to actually, you know, where it happened? I mean, how close was the actual model? I'm curious.
Yes. We have a case for record for every day, right? Then say for Nessus 10s, then we have several cases located there. So that's the ground truth, that's the truth. Then we also did our prediction, and then for 10th next day was the prediction. Then we'll compare ground truth and our prediction and see the difference. So that measures error in that prediction or uncertainty. So with that, we are about 70% correct spatial data. Yes.
Did this make an assumption of the spatially continuous probability distribution?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We had several assumptions made there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you also do a spatial temporal error plot of your ground truth versus your prediction over time?
Spatial temporal error.
Yes. Yeah, so you have this. You have the.
The residuals.
Yeah. So basically, a trend, kind of like an error surface, basically over time.
Yeah.
You see, typically with propagation of error, you get a widening cone, a widening cliff. Yeah. It would be interesting to see if your error over time, your prediction, also blossomed out over time. If that error grew, or if you trended about a bias in the system or an average.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is good, very good suggestion. Perhaps we should go next area.
So you haven't done a video of the error itself. that
yeah,
works.
That's part that we didn't do much. But we predict each point there, what's the prediction there. And but from your point of view, I think you do the continuous the error models distribution, right?
Well, similar to what you've done here, but just for every time, whatever your discretization, if you do it every day,
yeah,
and that would be the time slice. You compare ground truth, as Jeff was talking about, with the data that drove this model. The difference of that becomes your JPEG image for that day.
Yeah.
You do that for every ground truth position and day, and then stack those. Subtracted from the data you had here, that result becomes a new AVI file.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Data. Yes.
So that you don't have something like that.
No, I don't have video here. Yeah.
So I'm very interested. I agree with you that data quality and uncertainties in spatial data are a great hazard in drawing conclusions and inferences. But I'm interested in the distinction between random and systematic bias in that quality, and what you see as the data science challenges for dealing with bias in spatial data.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Basically, the nature, the random part of error, for error part, we have a random, we have a systematic, we have a gross error. That's the three nature of error we normally measure. Normally, in the process, what we do is the mathematical model we use statistically. We mainly handle the random error. And we can do some prediction on the gross error there. So we before we process, we remove the gross error. And also, systematic error normally comes from the model itself. Mm-hmm. So if we do the process, we do the model adjustment, then we try to reduce that part of systematic. So the final, the normal leftover is we use model, we do the process for random part. So that's the main focus for the our uncertain models.
I'm interested because this is the big bugaboo of big data, is systematic errors don't decrease with increasing data.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you talked about the points with line segments between them and the uncertainties based on the position of the points. But if you're using that to represent, for example, if you have a set of points and lines that can represent the coast of the state of Maine, no matter how many times you measure that, you won't get any closer to the actual length because that's a model with a fixed bias because of the generalization.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if there are thoughts about addressing those issues of spatial bias, that and autocorrelation. There's a whole series that maybe are the reason why the GI scientist has been hesitant to embrace some big data techniques because they don't really help with those.
Okay. Yes. For next part, I think we include two. Can we use next board? Can I write?
Can.
Oh, yes.
I think chalk.
I saw that as a play card.
Okay.
The issue you mentioned actually include two parts. This is the cost, as the brain says, right? There are two errors. One is if we can correctly identify the location of that cost, then we just do the measurement. Then we have a random error here. So that's one thing. The second thing is a step before that, so it's interpretation error. So we cannot interpret the error, the location of that cause precisely. Either it's here or it's here, we're not sure. So that's is the uncertainty in the interpretation. So finally, there are two uncertainty generate the final result. One is interpretation uncertainty, another is the measurement random error. Mm-hmm. So putting that together, that's come to the uncertainty of the overall. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
thought that to follow up, there's a third uncertainty that was the temporal dimension. Because, you know, however precise that you can measure it, it will not be the same as time goes, right? The coastline fluctuates because of time, not because just your measurement there. So the data model itself, we need to consider that and maybe incorporating the temporal dimension into it, or maybe aggregating and generalizing over time rather than.
Yes, you're right. We need to consider temporal movement of the cost. So two issues there. One is when we define the boundary of cost, then we design in certain time stage, then this is the time we should measure. And with that include plus the temporal information, perhaps we have better result.
In one of your early slides, and it doesn't have to show it again, you had the statement, the graphics you were pointing saying how a percentage of companies, decision makers don't trust their data, and what's the percentage of issues with data and so on. The source of that, could you explain a little bit how those general conclusions were made? Is it you're citing some other people's statement, or how did you draw that conclusion?
Okay, thank you. This is I signed IBM data because actually.
Do you know how they make that prediction or statement?
No, I don't know. Probably I can actually explore about how they come to that solution. This is from the IBM, because in the they're very actively in working, say for example, smart city and big data. That they're a very strong team. So, but they didn't publish the sources. They come to that solution. Perhaps, we can write to them and say because that's also from paper and it's not difficult to.
It's published paper.
Yes, that's published. Mm-hmm. Then I sign as diagram. And I have a break IBM. So this is from their assignment error result. It's a good question. Thank you.
So, another question about the spatial temporal modeling. Did you do any work with, when you did your predictions, you did it on a daily, based on daily sampling?
Yeah.
Did you go back then and do sub data sampling? So, basically, to increase the frequency of the sampling?
Yeah.
See if what you were seeing wasn't actually a beat frequency. Yeah. Something that you thought was happening at a slow rate, there was actually something going on at an even faster rate, but at the rate at which you were sampling, it appeared to be going on more slowly. So for example, the buildup you thought it was doing, you had a certain population that was being distributed, how people were getting sick. If you had sampled more finely, you would actually see higher order dynamics that were going on. And that by undersampling, you only saw a slower movement of the prediction. Did you do anything like that to go back and check?
No, we didn't, but I think it's a good suggestion. What you mean is you retrospect the sample, but you go to even final temporal resolution, and then see how it affected the prediction, right?
It's a thing called a Nyquist frequency.
Yeah.
So, you do the same thing by looking at a wheel on a car as it goes around. If you blink your eyes at the right rate, the wheel seems to stand still. If you blink faster, the wheel seems to be going backwards. If you blink it slowly, the wheel seems to be going forward in time.
Yeah,
so you do the same thing with sampling. See, there are also higher order dynamics that work that you're not really seeing.
Yeah. Very good suggestion. Thank you. So it's see how temporal resolution affect the final prediction.
Right. It'd be similar to pixelation. Mm-hmm. As you zoom out of the picture, you start to see more information there.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought going on in the menu.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to how you do with generalization. You know, when you measure the cost, you would actually measure that at, well, at more than one granularity, and then you can look at, you know, asymptotically, if you had to keep increasing it, what would the constant length
right.
be? Yeah.
But that problem is always one of the problems because you start to go down.
Right, but there is usually a distinct fractal dimension to a natural phenomenon, which means that you can converge on a length by looking at just, you know, you're looking at an extrapolation curve of the granularity, and you just need to model part of that and then extrapolate that.
Mm.
Thank you for that question.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, it's this modeling the real world that gets you into trouble all the time.
Yes.
Isn't there a framework for processing? You know, there's been talk about things like spatial Hadoop or using Hadoop MapReduce for spatial processing. Has your group done any work in looking at ways or frameworks to process large spatial data?
Yeah, we now are starting to collaborate with the computing department on the SCAR. So it's just the very beginning stage on data process part, on the unstructured data model part. That's sort of two issues. I think we need to work together with them because this is also the research focus currently for computing science departments. Yeah. So we haven't make any progress so far on this. Yeah, hopefully next time when I come, I can bring something.
That carries its own communications difficulty.
Uh-huh. You mean the...
Talking with computer scientists.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, sometimes. but the good thing is we have a long time of collaboration in this department. Actually, I do think quite many of progress we made in geoscience part is heavily related to the computer science. So I think their trend of development is really worthwhile to pay attention to. Yes.
So compare the two concepts of spatial data science versus geographic information science, mm-hmm. right? It seems like spatial is more abstract than geographic. And data goes back upstream than information, right? So what's your concept of the relationship between the two in terms of saying, is it appropriate to further simplify the geographic domain and consider it as an abstract space, right? When you build models and methodologies and so on. Because the geographic domain has its own confinement, because that's the Earth's surface.
Yes.
Versus space could be any mathematically defined dimension, right?
Yes.
And then compare the data versus information. Information has already been a step forward, a kind of process, more meaningful to application. Versus data is the original. Of course, it ties closer to the big data sources now that we are all exposed to. But what is the advantage of pushing it that way versus the original definition of GI science?
Thank you very much. That's a very fundamental question. Yes, I think spatial perhaps is more generic. See, for instance, if we talk about the geographical information science, we say geography, then what about the human body? This is also spatial part, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to brain model, 3D model, this is also spatial model, but you cannot say this is a geographical brain model, so, but you can say this is a spatial brain model. So I would think spatial, the term of spatial is more generic. Let's talk about the spatial one. So that's one thing. Spatial perhaps is more generic, wider. Number two is about information versus data. If you look at our textbook or our knowledge dealing with, we talk about data model. We do not say information model. when we're dealing with GIS, right? Like with the object based model or the field based model, that's about data model. That's a fundamental vector and raster in GIS science. This is fundamental model we're dealing with, is data model, not an information model. We do data processing, we do data capture. We have a data capture method. We use the photogrammetry, we use LiDAR, we use things. This data capture method, that's data. So data capture, data model, data process. Up to here, we always say it's data. We didn't say information, right? So afterwards, when we go to the spatial data mining, then starts to generate knowledge and information from data. Next part goes to information and knowledge. So if we go back and review what we have done in the past, we're dealing more with data or we're dealing more with information? Ask us a question. Look at the conference in the early time. The best conference in GIS science, GIS system early time is called a spatial data handling, right? That's where we start. So today, perhaps we need to go back a little bit thinking on this. We're dealing with information or dealing with data, right? So this is a part of thinking why I raise this issue, spatial data science, or we should say spatial information science. Look at the things we're doing, we're dealing with what. So that gives me a little bit more confidence to say perhaps we should think at least one of the directions data part of data science. A step further is in the era of big data. I don't think we should overemphasize on big data, but it's there. It's one of the trend, I would think. So regarding that part, what would be us? So in the computing science or big data area, what they would like to develop is a data science. Because if we stay at the technology part, it's technology. After the technology developed to a certain level, then it will come with science. Then what's the name of that science? So that's I would like to share with you that's thinking on that.
Well, from the other side, I mean, certainly is the case here. Many people would like to talk about data science, but it has developed a pretty specific definition, which is the application of machine learning and similar statistical techniques to large, poorly structured data. I want to say high dimensional data. And so there's been a lot of back and forth about, well, so what's the spatial part of that? What are the specific concerns about making those techniques spatial? There's no consensus on that. But the two things, the issue of bias and the issue of autocorrelation are sort of principal among those. That seems to be. I spend a lot of time going to groups of data scientists and explaining what autocorrelation is because they have no idea. It's nice that you found a correlation. Let me tell you why that is meaningless. So that from the other side is this, you know, instead of going from geographic to spatial, you can say, okay, there's this data science, how does it apply to spatial information?
And to geographic space, the geospace. Mm-hmm. I think space is definitely broader concept, but the geospace has its own properties and principles that if you overlook that, just space alone could be misleading too. But I definitely agree with you that data is probably a closer definition to what we're doing than information in a way. The information is more tied to application side.
I'm not sure I'd agree with that. I think that once you have features and you give them attributes, Then you have information.
Then it's information.
Yeah. When you have a bunch of cell phone pings or car locations, and you're trying to say, so, you know, what does that look like? I think that's the data part, the measurements. And somewhere in between there, we go from data to information.
Yeah.
But at least we have sort of the endpoints to say. You know, we measure it, it's data. We characterize it, and that's become information. And then we can explain it to someone else, it's knowledge.
Right, right. So the information is a bridge between data and knowledge. Like you have to produce that through the pipe.
So the GIS should be GDS, geographic data system.
Geographic, yeah, connecting the two or something.
But it's good to think about information that way, because really, the GIS, much of it is just managing the data. It's geographic data system. Once you analyze it and map it, those two things make it information. But I think, you know, the attributes would still be data, right? Like you have a tree inventory and you have
Not really, because you've put those values in the context of the model.
Some scientific
model.
So, you know, we have a theory that there is such a thing as a street.
Tree diameter would be data. Tree type
would be. Well, we'd say, you know, so the diameter attribute of these tree features is 3 feet, but say, you know, we measured, we have this measurement and it's 3.
That's data.
That's data.
But then radius, that's data. That's data. Well, actually, if you normalize your database, you don't put that in the calculator value. So that would be information. So you do in the strict sense.
Yeah. So you're applying the circular data model.
I see. That's what I was looking for. thanks to Euclid. What future data sets, big data sets, are you interested in? I mean, you mentioned, you know, Google and Purdue and Influenza. Do you have your eye on certain big data sets to analyze coming up, or?
Why is LiDAR data? This is a wild new focus of our research. I think that's a huge data, because that's the one, it's a new data generating method, which is faster, and it can be easier to get a three-dimensional city model based on that. Not only the outdoor, but the indoor, that's this new area. I think that's one. The second one is based on the internet, social media data. It's huge. Sorry?
I couldn't quite hear you.
Oh, yeah. The data from internet.
Okay, just any kind of crowdsourced. We're
interested in those spatial related data, spatial internet, by the way, the spatial information.
What's the word? Two tweets.
There's that too.
Well, thank you very much again. That was very interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.